too, I'd like to say good morning to each one. It's good to, it's good to be here. I want to welcome all our visitors here. It's good to see you here. It's good to have some of you. Has been a little while since you've been here, and it's nice to have you back with us. I trust that you'll continue to feel at home as you worship with us this morning. The subject I want to think about this morning was assigned to me. It's the question is in, or the title is in question form. It's very practical. The title that was given to me was, "Do I Need My Brother?" And I guess that's a question only you can answer this morning. Do you need your brother? Do you need your sister? Do you, as you look around the congregation here, if you're part of this congregation, do you feel a need of those around you? If you are part of another congregation, do you feel a need of the members that you associate with in your congregation? And the very first two boys in the world had a problem, and God asked Cain where Abel was, and he said, "Am I my brother's keeper?" What was wrong with that? He didn't assume responsibility for his brother. He was trying to avoid the question that God was asking him. He knew where Abel was. He knew what he had done with him. But he avoided that question, tried to avoid that question. The fact was that Cain needed Abel. Cain's offering was not accepted, and Abel's was. Cain needed to learn something from Abel. Instead, he tried to take care of the problem, or the perceived problem that he thought he had. And we know that was sin. He was selfish. He was unwilling to acknowledge the need, the help that Abel could have been to him. I guess the goal of this message is help us to appreciate our church family more, let's put it in a nutshell, and to also to help us to understand the importance of the church to us, the importance of the church, of the brotherhood to us. The decisions that are made in the church and in the brotherhood, do we submit to what's decided, even if we don't always agree? And I was struck, I guess, with the discussion that went in Sunday school. It went along with a lot of what I have to share this morning. As we think about the title, "Do I Need My Brother?" You know, when we're in need of something, we realize that we do not have it all put together. We're not all self-sufficient. We realize that we have a deficit. We need somebody to help us. And I think that's important as we think about relating to our brothers. You know, when our brothers and sisters, to realize that we do not have all the answers. We need to open ourselves up to their counsel. And sometimes that can be difficult. And oftentimes it's because of our own carnality, I'm sure. But nevertheless, we need to open ourselves up to each other's counsel. For the text verse, I'd like to look in the Old Testament at two friends that had a very strong relationship, had a very strong bond, and that's in 1 Samuel 18. I'd like to look at the first five verses of Samuel 18 as a text. I'd like to look at the account of Jonathan and David. I'd like to consider this account, first of all, look at both of them a while, and then I'd like to switch gear just a little bit and try to try to understand how the need of the church in our own lives. 1 Samuel 18, verses 1 through 5. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Now, verse 1, the word knit simply means to tie, physically or mentally, to bind, join together, to knit, to make stronger. And we can understand that as we think of, it says the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. We can see throughout their lives, we know the story, how that the tremendous bond, the tremendous friendship that was between David and Jonathan. And whenever I read these verses, I often wished that there was more given between chapter 17 and verse 18. To me, it'd be very interesting to know exactly what David and Saul was talking about. Obviously, we don't need to know, and so because God didn't record it. But to me, it'd be very interesting. What all did David and Saul talk about? In my mind, I can imagine Jonathan standing off to the side and hearing David talk with his father. And in the conversation, Jonathan somehow realized that David had a similar goals, similar passions, similar ideals, and similar convictions, I believe, in the fact, in what all he was conveying to his father Saul. We realize that David was talking to Saul immediately after he had killed Goliath. And we know what courage that had taken for David to stand up and defend the children of Israel seemingly all alone. And if you look back in Jonathan's life, Jonathan had done something somewhat similar. Obviously, it was not a giant, but back in, I think it was chapter 14, 1 Samuel 14, Jonathan had went alone, him and his armor bearer, up against the Philistines, the garrison of Philistines, and had wrought a great victory for the children of Israel. Perhaps he could identify with David's willingness and determination to defend the children of Israel. Now let's contrast the backgrounds of Jonathan and David. Let's look at the difference between the way David grew up and the way Jonathan grew up. Jonathan grew up a king's son. He was in the king's palace. He no doubt had much activity going on. Contrast, David was a shepherd out in the hills watching his father's sheep. In the quietness of the meadows, in the quietness of the pastures, possibly, watching his father's sheep. And no doubt their lifestyles were hugely different. Their lifestyles were a huge contrast. But nevertheless, David had developed a trust in God out there in the field with his sheep. In 1 Samuel 17, verse 32 to 37, David here is in front of Saul, and it's before he went out against Goliath. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him, and I smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defiled the armies of the living God. David said, Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said unto David, Go, and the Lord be with thee. We see here David giving testimony of what God had already helped him with. God had helped him against that danger that he had found out there guarding the sheep. And I think that trust, that faith that helped David do that was what David was depending on for this fight against Goliath. And like I said before, Jonathan too was a man that desired to stand for the children of God, and somehow he learned the to depend on God, to love God. You think about the atmosphere that Jonathan was raised in. Jonathan was raised under a father that was no longer receiving the Lord's blessing. In 1 Samuel 13, verse 14, here Samuel was talking to Saul. He says, But now the kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. Chapter 16, verse 14, another verse talking about Saul, but the spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. Jonathan grew up under a dad that was no longer under God's blessing. Somehow Jonathan found God and found and developed his own convictions. And I think when Jonathan heard David talk with his father, it just seems to me like there was something there that he could identify with, something there that maybe he was longing for, identity with another man that was identity with another person that too had a conviction to serve God. I think Jonathan saw in David a kindred spirit. Their friendship was based on something more than just their background. They had something that drew them together more than just the way they were raised. It was their desire to follow God, I believe. They had a difference in background, but they were together in their convictions. In 1 Samuel 18, I marvel at Jonathan's attitude in 18 verse 4. Says, Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. If you look into the tradition of the Eastern countries, I found that this act of giving his clothes, his robe, was a gesture of great honor, was a gesture of close friendship. And especially if they had already worn the clothing. And you see Jonathan, Saul's son, giving his clothes, the clothes that belonged to the king's family, to Jonathan or to David. In 1 Samuel 23, 14 to 18. Here we have David. He was running from Saul. He was out in the woods, in the wilderness, it says. And verse 14 says, "And David abode in the wilderness in strongholds and remained in a mountain in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God delivered him not into his hand. And David saw that Saul was come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the wood and strengthened his hand in God. And he said unto him, Fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel. And I shall be next unto thee, and that also Saul my father knoweth." Jonathan's attitude about not being able to succeed his father in the kingship, in being king. It's evident that there was humility in Jonathan's life. There was unselfishness. You know, that could have been the most of the reason why their friendship stayed alive, was the fact that Jonathan was willing to submit his circumstances to the control, to submit his circumstances to God outside that were outside of his control. It was not his problem that he was not, it was not his fault that he was not in line to be king anymore. It was because of his father's failure. But he realized in David someone that he could confide in. He realized in David a kindred spirit. And he was willing to submit himself to that. You know, Jonathan encouraged David, and Jonathan did what he could for David. And we see how that relationship went on even after Jonathan's death, how David took care of some of Jonathan's descendants. So this morning, as we look at that, it was challenging to me as I thought about the contrast between Jonathan and David in their upbringing, in the way they related to each other. But as you think of being a brother, we think of being a sister. In the natural sense, when we are a brother or a sister, we belong to a family. And I'd like to compare that to the church family. Do I need my brother or sister? And I guess the question that came to me as I thought about that question was another question. And I think it's a question that we need to answer honestly and humbly. But we need to ask the question, does my brother or sister need me? And obviously that could be taken wrong, and could answer that from a proud heart. But I want to think about that as a humble answer to that question. Does my brother or sister need me? In other words, if everyone in church was like me this week, what kind of a church would we have? If everyone said the things that I said this week, what kind of brother would I have in church? If everyone reacted like I reacted this week, what kind of church would I have? If everyone went to the places that I went this week, what kind of church would I have? Would we have? Am I sincerely following God? Am I sincerely doing everything that I know to do to do what was right? I believe it was John F. Kennedy in his inaugural address said something like this. I might not have it exactly word for word, but he said, "Ask not what the country can do for me, but ask, what can I do for the country?" Mm-hmm. And I wonder, could we take that word country out? Could we put church there instead? Ask not what the church can do for me, but ask, what can I do for the church? It's a tremendous change in attitude as you think about that question. It's going from a selfish question, asking what all I can get for myself instead, in turn giving ourselves to for the good of the church. I'm sure that if all of us would have that same attitude in our lives this year. Our church will be full of blessings. Our church will be a church that has God's blessing on it. I have a couple points here I'd like to make about the church. And the first one I'd like to get from Matthew 12. The last five verses of Matthew 12. Here Jesus was here speaking. And he says, "While he yet talked to the people, behold, his mother and his brethren stood without, desiring to speak with him. Then said one unto him, Behold, thy mother and thy brethren stand without, desiring to speak with thee. But he answered and said unto him that told him, Who is my brother and who are my brethren? And he stretched forth his hand toward his disciples and said, Behold, my mother and my brethren. For whosoever shall do the will of my Father which is in heaven, the same as my brother and sister and mother." Those that do the will of God are the family of Christ. And what a privilege it is to be able to have this verse as a promise that if we do the will of the Father, we are his brother. We are part of his family. We are his sister. And in Hebrews 2 verses 11 to 13, it talks about for both he that sanctifies, I'm sorry, I wrote the wrong chapter down. Hebrews 2. The verse that I wanted was, Christ is not ashamed to call us brethren. And I find that challenging, that Christ himself is not ashamed to call us brethren. We that were sinners, we that were far from him, can be brought nigh, can be brethren, and brethren could be called Christ's brethren. And we can be part of the same family. John 1 verse 12, "But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name." Isaiah 63 verse 16, "Doubtless thou art our father, though Abraham be ignorant of us, and Israel acknowledge us not. Thou, O Lord, art our father, our redeemer, thy name is everlasting." And in Romans 8, verses 14 to 15 says, "For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. For we have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father." You know, adoption is a beautiful thing. Adoption brings children into homes that have the same right as biological children. We this morning are part of God's family. Part of Christ's family. We are adopted. We are adopted into his family. And that is beautiful to have to be able to be a part of God's family. Ephesians 2:19 says, Now therefore you are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints in the household of God. You know, the church is made up of many individuals of many different backgrounds. And as I thought about our church here, we have a variety. Some of us have grown up here in Columbia and Mahoney counties, and this is where we've lived most of our lives. Others grew up in other states. Others have grown up in different church backgrounds. And maybe some have even grown up in different countries. And our backgrounds definitely affect how we view things in life, and including church life, and how we relate to church life, and sometimes those kind of differences seem like maybe it can be a point of can I say conflict, but that can be a source of strength as well. I heard a statement here not very long ago, someone said to me, I've been thinking about it for a while, and I would like, if you have anything to share with me on this statement, I'd be willing to hear it. I think there's a lot of truth in it. Simply said this, it came from an older ordained brother. It says, the church needs to stop trying to think alike, but instead needs to start thinking together. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. However, I think we could probably take that too far. But I think as we think about our backgrounds, sometimes our differences, we don't always see everything the same. But as we start thinking together, start bringing our thoughts together, being free with each other in our viewpoints, you know, with obviously we need to use discretion and you need to be thoughtful of others, but feel free to express ourselves. That's what church should be like, is being able to express our opinions, but then as the church decides on something, we submit to what the church decides. Obviously there are guidelines that we in scriptural principles we don't want to give up, but in many things in church life we need to submit to each other. In 1 Corinthians 12, just going to read a few verses out of 1 Corinthians 12, verses 12 to 14. It talks about the body of Christ as being, and compares it to our physical bodies. For as the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit are we all baptized into one body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether we be bond or free, and have been all made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. And 24, verse 27, for our comely parts have no need, but God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked, that there be no schism in the body, and that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it, or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now ye are the body of Christ, and members in particular. You know, the members of our body obviously have different functions. And, you know, our eyes are very important, but they're very sensitive. It takes just a little bit of dirt in your eye, and you have pain. You can't see right, and it can be a real hindrance. You take your feet, your hands, and your arms. It can have 10 times that much dirt on them, and it's not so big of a deal. And you know, the same way I think in church life, not all of us have the same talents, but all of us have an important place to fill. In Acts 12, I'm not going to turn to that, but we have the account there of Peter was in prison, and it was looking very serious for his life. The church was praying, and the church did their part in interceding for Peter, and we understand what happened there, his miraculous escape. And we have another count in Acts 2, in Acts 4, how they brought their possessions together. They sold their possessions. They met the needs of of their church brethren. They, in Acts 4, I thought it was interesting that it specifically says in verse 32, "And the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and one soul. Neither said any of them that ought to the things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things common." It speaks, it to me, it speaks here of the church having their needs met, and the things that they did own were not things that kept them captive to their things, but instead they had left those things go in their minds, and they were willing to use whatever they had to meet the needs of the church. Also, the church family also speaks truth about situations, and in 2 Samuel 12 we have the account here of David. And Nathan had to come and rebuke David for his sin. And God used Nathan to bring about repentance in David's life. And in Hebrews 4, verse 15, it talks about speaking the truth in love. You know, there's situations that come to us sometimes that we need to speak the truth and to tell what the truth is, but in a loving way. And in Matthew 18, it gives us a very clear instructions on how to do that, and to try to resolve the differences that come up at times. The second point here, the church or the brotherhood is a place of security and refuge. In John 10, we have the account here of Jesus giving the example of the sheepfold. And in John 10, verses 7 to 18, I would like to read those verses. "Then said Jesus unto them again, Verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not, but for to steal, and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is an hireling and not a shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth, and the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is an hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father." And in Matthew 18, verse 20, it says, "For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst." You know, the sheepfold was a place of security for the sheep. It was a place where they could come in at night and find security. It was a place that they were free from danger. And they could only come in by one door. You know, they had that, the sheep that were part of that sheepfold had that in common. They needed security, and they had one door by which to come in if they were to be in that sheepfold. Back in the account of David and Jonathan, they found security in each other's friendship. David depended on Jonathan not to reveal to Saul where he was. We remember the account where Jonathan shot those three arrows, and It was a sign of whether to go into hiding or not. They had a bond there. They found a common bond between them. And it seems to me that the friendship that Jonathan gave David was almost more than David could return. David was on the run. He was hiding. He was fleeing for his life. But Jonathan was willing to look out for David because of the friendship and the bond that he had with him. You know, the sheep of the sheepfold have a common place to call home. They have the same shepherd. Like I said, they have the same door. And Jesus wants, I believe, do I need my brother? Do I need the brotherhood? Do I need the church? I believe I do myself, and I believe you do as well. That whoever comes can feel welcome. They can feel safe. They can come and feel safe from the sinful world around us. In Ephesians 3, it talks about the strangers from the covenant of promise. Ephesians 3, I'll read verses 17 and 18, that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that ye being rooted and grounded in love may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God. You know, the church is made up of saved sinners, and we have that in common. And I think as we relate to each other in church life, I think we need to realize that we do need our brethren. We do need different perspectives on some things. We need to be open. We need to be humble. We need to sacrifice ourselves for our brethren. And if you look in history and you look at our Anabaptist forefathers, they strongly believed in a new birth experience. They believed that we needed to have, first of all, the salvation in our hearts, but after that, there was practical obedience that came from studying the scriptures from our lives. And they believed that the brotherhood, our brethren would help us in giving us direction on how to live. And in Matthew 16, I'm not going to turn to that, but Jesus said, whatever is bound, he was talking to Peter and giving him the keys and the whatever is bound in earth will be bound in heaven and so on, giving the authority to the church to make practical applications, I believe. And I think it's important that I need that. I need your input, because none of us have all the answers. None of us have everything that it takes to live out a Christian life by ourselves. We need the help of each other. In the closing, I'd like to read Paul's prayer for the church in Ephesians 3, verses 14 through 19. I already read most of this, but it was Christ's desire that we would have the indwelling of Christ in our hearts, and that we could be rooted and grounded in love. And I think that's the desire that Christ had for his church and for us as brothers and sisters in Christ, that we need to have the love for each other, and that love will help us in how we relate to each other.